What does motion sound like? With Kizikans free shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of the Posting and Toasting Show. I'm Drew. Schwinn's here. What up, Schwinn?
What up, what up, what up?
And you guys, we may or may not get a guest later in the show. We will find out. But right now, you're getting a rare treat of Schwinn and I going solo for an episode. Schwinn, how do you feel about this?
Feel pretty good. Feel pretty good. Yeah. Excited for this new frontier.
Yeah, I know. We're so used to having other people carry the show for us, so like now we have to like carry the show. This is rare territory. So today we are going to discuss the first preseason game of the Knicks against the Wizards on Monday night. Was it Monday night or Tuesday night did they play?
Monday.
Monday night. We are recording this on a Thursday night, so unfortunately you're going to have to wait a little while before we review the other games, but... No, but there's been tons of NBA news, not just NBA news, you know, American political news, international news, and if you are not familiar with it, we'll get you all caught up on the Daryl Morey and China NBA saga that's been going on, but that's going to be later in the show. So, let's talk about the preseason game, and if you guys did not watch it, the New York Knicks won 104-99 against the Washington Wizards, who are honestly a terrible team. I mean, the team is bad.
Yeah. And that's going to be a long season for them.
Yeah, they barely have. They have like what, maybe 3 and 4 NBA players. They have like Ish Smith, Bradley Beal, Thomas Bryant, and Rui looked pretty solid. Like that's it. That's their. Yeah.
And then they had that white guy that like came in and hit ridiculous threes for a while.
Garrison Matthews.
Yeah, whoever that is. Yeah, he looked all right.
Yeah, he did look pretty good. That Wagner kid? He looked terrible. He's so bad.
He's no Mitch. He's still finding his way.
Yeah, he was. I'm looking at his stat line right now. He was a 5 for 14 and 1 for 7 from 3. Moritz Wagner. Oof. That's brutal. But all right. That's enough about the Wizards.
It's not pretty.
Definitely not pretty. Let's talk about the next. Swin, who were your people who stood out more in this game in a Knicks uniform?
Who stood out?
Yeah, who stood out? Like who you were like, oh wow, this he looks. You know, this, I'm excited to watch him moving forward this season.
Well, definitely RJ.
I'm with you on that.
Yeah, even when he I hate that starting line. I don't hate the starting lineup, but like there are just some obvious issues that are going to exist with it. So like, I don't even know if I should get upset about the issues existing because I knew that they were going to suck at spacing the floor. I knew the ball wouldn't move that well. I knew the defense would not be as good with that starting lineup for a variety of reasons, but. I don't really want to get into that. What I do want to get into, though, RJ looked good. Probably the biggest surprise, or not the most pleasant surprise, was that like he was really engaged on defense. And look, I mean, obviously he's not perfect. He's not like some elite defender, but just at his size, him being engaged, that does a lot. And he held his own against Bradley Beal, who, like, granted, again, you know, Beal might be just. He probably is half-assing it, one, because it's preseason, two, because he's looking around his team like, fuck this. But yeah, he held his own against Beal. I thought that was really impressive to see. The other thing I really liked in the first half was even though he wasn't touching the ball a lot, he was still like it didn't affect his defensive effort. And then on top of that, he also, you know, it wasn't like he was still engaged offensively, even though he wasn't, you know, getting to handle the rock a ton. Like, he was making himself open for threes, and granted, I think he went 0-for-4 from three in the first half, but, you know, he was still doing it. He had a couple of really nice cuts off the ball that he scored on in the first half. So, yeah, like, he found a way to make himself, you know, impactful still. Like, and obviously his rebounding is always, like, that's a huge plus for him. That's when he's, like, that's a genuine elite skill he has for a wing. So that was great to see that he, you know, and not that I really doubted it, but obviously just good to see that he was doing it. And then, yeah, the second half, you know, when you could kind of see, like, as soon as Elford went out and Frank came in and it's a more egalitarian offense that's being run, which isn't to say Payton is selfish. He's not actually selfish at all, but he's very much like a creator. So, you know, it's a less... He's not going to share it. He's going to initiate everything, right? And with Frank, it was like you could see they were taking turns doing that. And that obviously suits RJ a ton because, you know, arguably his – I just mentioned his rebounding, but arguably his next most elite skill is passing. And just giving him the ball and letting him kind of go to work was nice. So even if – you know, like, there are definitely some finishes he had where I think, like, you know, regular season, I'm not sure he's going to be able to get it off or there'll be an adjustment that needs to be made. You know, it was just good to see kind of, like, that whole package. And he also stepped up, like, when, I mean, it sounds so stupid to say, when the game was in balance in the third quarter. But, like, I mean, he kind of did, right? Like, that was, they had made a little run and he kind of just took over for a quarter. So, yeah, I mean, there was just a lot to like about it. It's good to have young players because generally you can always talk yourself into the long-term positives involved. And, yeah.
Oh, you summed up everything. Well, maybe not summed up. You were definitely going on, but definitely you hit on everything about how good RJ was. On Monday, it was so nice to see. Even like, you know, he came in clutch, like, you know, he stepped in for like that charge, like little, like he was doing all the little things he needed to do, and he just like he needed to get in transition, to, you know, draw a foul. He was there. They called him back on that. I forgot they did like the review, which I had no idea that was even going to happen, that they were doing like a replay review on stuff. But you know, they had one call back, but like that didn't matter to him. He managed to get another one, and like a few possessions later, and it was just wonderful to see. It was just like, I was pretty skeptical of RJ, you know, coming into the draft and everything like that. And it's just kind of nice to be like, oh, okay, if he's going to play defense, he's going to be fine, because I feel like the shot will eventually get there, you know, in a couple years. Like, I'm not expecting him to ever be a lights-out shooter, but if he's going to shoot, like, 35% from, like, three.
Yeah, that's fine.
Like, that's fine. And if he can figure out, you know, when he can continue to, like, you know, work on his handle and, like, navigate through the through the paint and things like that, I think he's going to be fine as a pro. Like, he's definitely someone I'm actually, for the first time, for like a draft pick, I'm like Frank or Knox or someone where I'm like, not worried. He's going to be good. He may not be a superstar, but he's going to be a good player for his career.
Yeah, I'll be very surprised. That was actually always like my take on RJ though, is that like, I didn't see bust potential. I saw like, yeah, maybe he doesn't end up being a star, but I mean, that's the case with basically any pick other than Zion in last year's draft. And in most drafts, like, what, there's maybe, you're lucky if there's one guy that you're like, yeah, Zier, like, he's definitely going to be a star. So that's just always a risk. But he just does, like, the fact that he can pass and rebound at a plus rate, like, you know, that already gives you the foundation of a pretty solid player. And it's like, he doesn't really need to do much more than maybe, you know, score slightly more efficiently. But he scored efficiently. That's the thing. Like, he scored efficiently in that game. And you can tell, like, if he scores efficiently, he's so, like, between scoring efficiently and just giving a shit on defense, if he can do those two things, he's so obviously, like, a two-way plus player and you know, not just that, like, that's what really gives him that star upside. But I don't want to get too much into RJ. I think we've blabbered on about him enough. I thought Frank also had a really nice game. I don't want to talk about him too much because I'm sure that people think that, like, we're the biggest Frank homers ever, and we are, but, like...
Yeah, I mean, we are, but still. Yeah, we don't have to go into it. He was good. He was great.
And the thing is, he kept shooting. That was the biggest thing I took away from that, is he stayed aggressive the entire game, even when he was missing shots. Obviously, yes, he needs to make shots for that to matter, but, like, the first step is actually just continuing to fucking shoot the ball, which he has not done throughout his career. So really good to see that. Fizdale even commented on that after the game, which I think was genuine. Like, I don't know. I think it's really weird that, like, everybody just thinks he's this snake oil salesman now, but it's like, dude, that's like what a coach for a rebuilding team kind of has to be at times. And I totally get it. I've been there. I have been pissed about him, you know, talking about defense and then not valuing it with his.
Well, that's where the snake oil salesman comes from. It's his idea, like, you know, defense first, and he literally wouldn't play defensive lineups. Like, that's where it comes from.
I mean, I get that, but I also think, like, people are way too harsh on what he was working with last year, where it's like, look, yes, I agree it was annoying he went away from that one really good lineup we had, but I think if you zoom out and honestly take a look at, like, everything that transpired last year, you can also fairly say that I think Frank was probably hurt a lot sooner than we knew publicly, and that clearly affected his play, and I think Fizdale maybe was just trying to protect him to a certain degree. We don't know. I don't know. I'm speculating also. I just think that people need to chill the fuck out with, like, the constant Fizdale. I mean, look, there are decisions he made even in that preseason game that I was like, this is so stupid. But, you know, just chill the fuck out. Like, relax. Let's see what happens. Give him some time. This is a brand new team. We'll see what he is. Maybe 15 games in the season, then we can start having some real discussions about what's going on with Fizz. But, Frank was good. I really liked that pairing with him and RJ. One of the reasons, and I'll get into this further, but one of the reasons I didn't mind Elford coming off or starting is I actually really like that bench combination of, like, Frank, Yeah, I just like that trio of, like, Frank, Knox, and Taj coming off the bench together. I mean, those three, I'm not looking at the box score, but I would imagine those three were probably among our biggest pluses on the evening, in the plus-minus column.
They were. Well, not Knox, but Frank and Taj were both pluses.
Well, oh yeah, Knox isn't, because if you want to talk about me not liking a Fizdale decision, it's because when Morris got ejected, he brought Knox in, and that unit predictably got lit the fuck up on defense.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, that's basically why. But anytime he shared the floor with Frank and Taj, like, I just loved that trio. I thought they had really good synergy. I loved that Fizz pulled. He pulled Elford, like, out pretty early in the second half. Basically, like, when they blew the lead, so it was, I think they went into half with, like, a 13 or 15-point lead, something like that.
Yeah, and then they blew, like, 18 at one point, too.
Yeah, then they blew it. They blew it completely. It was, like, 60-60. Then he comes in with Frank, and then, like, immediately they kind of find a rhythm offensively, start getting stops, start getting out on the open floor. I think they were up 12 or 13 by the end of the quarter again. But, yeah, like, that unit, and then when you added RJ to it, was, like, so much fun. And then I think they brought in Ellington, too, who he might have been the other guy that was a big plus.
He was a plus 9, yeah. I'm happy that they have Ellington. Like, I would, like, we mentioned this last year. Oh, yeah. Like, we mentioned this last episode with, like, getting rid of, like, Trier and Dotson in some sort of trade or something like that. That's something I would definitely consider. Just having just Wayne Ellen just being, like, someone who knows how to play basketball. Like, I know it sounds like a weird thing, and, you know, to say, but, like, he just knows where to go. He constantly moves off the ball. He's clearly the best shooter the team, and he competes. It's just, like, I'd rather him in than pretty much anyone other than, you know, I don't want, like, Trier or any of those guys in.
Right. And it's not just that he... Like, he generates some of that usage on his own, you know? Like,
right, exactly. He's
such a good movement shooter that he can run full sprint off the screen and get off a shot. And, like, you know, Dotson is a good shooter. He's a good enough shooter, but he can't generate usage like that. Like, he's not that type.
He's not coming off screens like Ellington is. Like, he's not moving that way. Like, he'll do it on like a pick and roll or a spot up, but other than that, like, he's not doing anything for you offensively.
Right, right. And it's like, I know, like, our friend Spencer Perlman has posted pick and roll shooting numbers, but it's like, do you really want to up Dotson's usage so that he's running a bunch of pick and roll? Like, no. You know, it's just, that's just not a role he's ever going to play. So, anyway, yeah, I just like that whole bench feel with RJ and Ellington. That was like a really fun unit, and, you know, we'll see. Obviously, it's early, just one preseason game, but definitely felt like the big winners in terms of guys maybe you were uncertain of in terms of how many minutes they're going to get, how much they're going to earn. You know, Frank, Taj, and Ellington, all three of them kind of capitalizing on injuries, too, with Dennis Smith out, Bobby Portis out, and Dotson out. I was really happy. I don't know if you really want to get into, like, guys that you didn't really like a lot, but...
Yeah, I'd rather not. I think I'll just briefly mention that I thought Mitch was actually rather disappointing in the game. Like, he was fine, but not really what I'm really looking for him. So I think that's really probably all I want to say, because it's only one preseason game, so I don't want to go too far into criticizing Mitch too much.
Yeah, I don't think Mitch was really into it. That's all I would say.
Yeah, it's just like the only thing I would say is like, hopefully he becomes into it during the season. That's really all I'll say, because otherwise it's going to be a very long season with him. But you mentioned before we hopped on, I think it's actually an important point to make about Elfrid Payton potentially becoming the starter. And I know a lot of people are concerned that, you know, it's another Moutier situation and a Jared Jack situation for Frank, but I think we're actually going to be similar on this, and you could definitely expand more, but this isn't really a Frank issue, because Frank's going to be like this combo guard. Sometimes he'll run the offense, sometimes he won't. So I don't see him as like a traditional point guard. I think we kind of saw that with like France and what the Knicks will eventually do. But you mentioned, and please expand, that this could potentially be an issue more for Dennis Smith Jr. than anything else.
Well, yeah, I just think like, look, we don't know. Like, it's hard. Again, we played one preseason game. Okay, and like I said, there are people that have made a lot of assumptions on what Fizz wants and doesn't want based on how he coached last season. I am trying to keep a more open mind, because I think last season was just like, you know, it was such a fucking weird season, and there was a lot of shit going on that he just had to put up with. I think he knew that like that team was not going to be his team, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree completely.
So.
Is that Alex Wolf of Locked On Knicks and Posting and Toasting?
No, some is other it, vagabond.
Is it Gavin?
Yeah, this is Gavin. This is Gavin Strong. how are you? Chris Porzingis is my god.
Oh god,
is that who you're talking about?
Yeah, on oh boy, what an entrance coming in here and saying the he who shall not be named on this podcast.
I like Gavin. Gavin's my guy, man. He's
no, let's talk about Porzingis, you know, number 6.
Yeah, oh, the other Hugh must not be named. I thought you were talking about, I was like, man, that's really mean to Gavin. No, you're talking about, okay, the actual Hugh.
Unisnake.
Yeah, Unisnake. Yeah. Disgusting creature.
Shout out to Remy Schwartz.
He was shooting 38% for 18 points and breaking the internet.
Yes. Oh. We were just talking about, I was saying that I think, like, Elfrid potentially being the starter is one, I don't think it's that big of a deal in terms of, I don't think it's that big of a deal for Frank. I think it might be a bigger deal for Dennis Smith. But, like, I just think, you know, if you look at, like, those three guys, what type of point guards they are, like, Frank is just different. Like, he's obviously a very different type of player. And sure, we don't know if Fizdale really cares about defense. And look, all I can say is that anytime he talks about Frank, even if you go back to last year, like, he is very much on point saying the same thing. And, like, yeah, maybe it's grating to people that he doesn't, like, just say he's a point guard, but he always says, like, he thinks Frank is a glue guy. He thinks Frank, like, always makes the right play. He always praises Frank in exactly the same ways consistently. And really, if you look at what he says, I would say that it echoes a lot of what, like, Knicks fans that want to keep him say, right? Like, he's a winning player. He can play both guard positions, right? Like, these are things that, like, even his biggest fans say. So, like, I just don't see it as that big of an issue. And, look, if Frank plays how he played in that preseason game, especially if he starts hitting, like, even 40% from the field and 33% from three or something, like, he's going to play. Like, he's going to make a role for himself, and that role is probably going to be backup point guard. You know, like, that's just, it's going to happen. I have too much faith in Fizdale not being an idiot, but I really don't think he's, like, a complete idiot. And I do, to an extent, take his word that, like, he values what Frank brings to the table. It might be that he, like, you know, kind of uses Frank to be, like, save some units defensively and, like, play him next to Alfred and RJ and stuff like that. Sure. But, like, I think he's going to find a role for him if he plays like that. And he clearly loves Alfred, right? Like, he clearly likes Alfred a lot. And, you know, a lot of their murmurs coming out of camp is that a lot of guys like playing with Alfred too, the guys on the team, players. I'm not saying that means they hate playing with Dennis Smith Jr. I have no idea. I just think it's interesting that, like, we're already getting reports of guys gushing over Alfred. And if you just look at the player types they are, you know, I don't think Dennis Smith... If Dennis Smith played with Alfred Payton, that would just be disgusting to watch.
I would refuse
to watch that, right? Like, but I don't think Frank and Alfred would be great, but I can imagine it. I can basically imagine Frank playing with, like, any guard on the team, or really anybody, but, like, specifically talking about backcourt players. There's not one person you could put him with that I'd be like, that makes no sense, that would be horrible, it lacks balance, or blah, 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 blah. Like, even him and Kadeem last year had some, like, decent minutes together and shit like that, you know? Like, it's just very obvious that he can play with a lot of guys, and, you know, I don't know what's going on with Dennis Smith Jr.'s back. Like, they're saying it's not that big of a deal, but this is the second preseason game he's missing, and, you know, I don't know. I think it's a bigger deal for him to be missing this time, especially if Alfred's out here, you know, winning everybody's, getting into everybody's good graces, more so than Frank, who, look, not just Fizdale, if you forget fucking Fizdale, if you don't believe him. Kevin Knox mentioned that he had come into camp and was playing really well. Alfred has gone out of his way to praise Frank. I think even Todd said something today or maybe a couple of days ago about, like, how good Frank was on defense. And I don't know, man. I just think that, like, all the murmurs coming out of camp is that it seems like Frank's having a really good camp and he's, like, proving himself. And, like, with Dennis, like, we heard a lot of stuff before camp. And that's not to say he's not having a good camp. I have no idea. We're just not hearing those, like, you know, those little tidbits that make you feel fuzzy and warm inside.
Yeah, to go back to what you said a minute ago, Schwinn, I've talked about this on Locked On Knicks a bunch too. I think that, like, the perception that Fizz hates Frank or whatever is way overblown, I think. I think that, like, if you look back at the situation last year as far as how Frank played and like, the opportunities that Fizz gave him, I think he was a little tough on him at times. Like, everybody goes back to the DNPs, you know, back in December to be like, oh, Fizz hates Frank. But, like, he gave him a starting spot at a camp at small forward, which was a little unconventional, but whatever, he gave him a starting spot. And then he eventually gave him a starting spot at point guard, and he gave him a quick leash, which sucked, but, you know, he did give him that. And then every time that, you know, Frank started to find himself the rest of the season, he would get hurt again. And that was the biggest thing, is, like, he would come back, he would be used in a limited role because he's trying to knock the rust off, and then he'd finally get to the point where he can play again, and he'd get hurt. And that was just kind of like the vicious cycle last year. But people interpreted that as like, well, oh, you know, he wasn't playing him a bunch right before he got hurt. And it's like, yeah, because he was working him back from another injury. And then, you know, Frank would get hurt again as soon as he finally figured it out.
Yeah, I've actually even, I don't know if I've talked about it on air, but I think I mentioned it in the comments on PNT. But, like, there was even a game last year. This is when he came back. Actually, it was before he went out for, like, that extended period. So, you know, kind of when he was working his way back into the rotation or whatever. There was a game against OKC at home where, like, we just came out and, like, immediately were down 20 points within, you know, 3 or 4 minutes or something like that. And he just benched Moutier for the rest of the first half. Frank play the rest. Like Frank would clearly had like a plus impact. We played them neutral the rest of the half. I think we even might have, you know, won the rest of the half or whatever. You know, then second half starts again, get fucking smoked the first 3-4 minutes, and he just benches Moody again and played Frank. So like, I sometimes wonder if he was using Moutier as like kind of the carrot that Frank needed to go get. Because like, you know, sometimes like certain guys respond to, you know, immediately you insert them as starters and they respond to that. Other guys maybe sometimes need like something to chase or something to kind of work for. And I'm not like, I'm not saying, I don't think any of us think like Frank is not a worker. It's pretty obvious he works hard. But it kind of gives him an idea of like, look, this is what I want from you. I want you to be aggressive. And he talked about that so much last year, right? Like, he's like we know what Fizz wants from his point guard. I don't think that necessarily means he doesn't value the other shit that Frank does. But he's like, look, man, like, I love everything that you do, but I need you to do this other thing, right? Like, I need you to be aggressive and to, like, get downhill and penetrate more and just, like, be more confident, you know? I think that's more than anything, just, like, exuding a little bit more confidence when you're on the floor. And, I mean, it's just crazy to me, like, how people think he hates him. Like, bro, if he hated him, why would he have gone? Like, he mentioned it, right? And we know that. Like, he's like, I met with Frank in L.A. And then we know that he also went to Dallas to, like, watch him work out when Frank was working out there. And we also know that Mike Miller was there at a workout. So, like, and Mike Miller, who has now been promoted to the coaching staff, right? He's an assistant. It's like, why would he spend this much time on a player he just didn't like and had no interest for, right? Like, I don't see that. Like, you'd be thinking, like, Fizz is playing some real crazy chess if you think that's what he's doing. I don't know. Like, I totally think that, like, Perry's not huge on Frank, but I don't think Fizz really is, like, I mean, maybe Frank's not his favorite player, sure. I definitely think, like, RJ is the kind of, like, alpha that Fizz has a huge raging, like, boner for. But, you know, I think he likes Frank fine. I mean, I don't see any reason to believe he otherwise. Whatever. I don't know. I just, yeah. Anyway, that's just like, I agree with you. I heard that. I think I forgot who was on with you when you guys were talking. That might have been when you had, was it with Vorkunov? Or was it with Piccolo? I think it was one of those. I remember you guys talking about that, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, full disclosure, I forget what episode that was, too. We talked about Frank a bunch. I want to say that was working out, though. Because with Piccolo, we talked about I talked about Mitch, mostly, because that was our Mitch season review. So I want to say that was probably Borkanov. But, yeah, I think I did make a point of asking him, like, is it overstated that Fizz dislikes Frank or whatever? And he kind of confirmed that. I mean, I don't know. I mean, they only get so much intel, too. I think it makes, honestly, as far as the media is concerned, I think it makes for a better storyline if Frank, like, the last talisman of Phil Jackson is, like, this odd man out. That the Knicks just want to get rid of to completely clean the slate or whatever and can't appreciate, you know, what he brings to the table and all this stuff. I think there is something to be said, though, like, for what you said about Perry. I don't think that Perry loves him, which is why he keeps trying to bring in other point guards. You know, he brought in Dennis Smith. He brought in Moutier. You know, he brought in Alfred this year, obviously. So, I don't know. I think they just want to have a healthy competition at point two, though, because – you know, I'm sure that Scott Perry and Steve Mills especially know better than anybody that the point guard spot has been easily the weakest position, you know, in the Knicks organization for the last fucking forever. I don't know. I was trying to find, like, a time frame, but, like, when was the last, like, truly, like, Stephon Marbury, I guess, was, like, the last, like...
No, Pablo Prigioni.
Pablo.
Ray no, it's Felton, like, you know, I mean, when's season, the... You know? It's like the last time we had a top half of the league starting guard was probably Marbury.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, I was going to say maybe the half season of Raymond Felton. Like, he was playing, like...
Nah, that's just fucking D'Antoni's bullshit offense.
Yeah, that was D'Antoni. Yeah. Not Patrick Felton.
But he looked great with Amari Stoudemire. So that
was it Chris Duhon?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, well, he does have the franchise Duhon, record. Oh, God. Most assists in a game.
Oh, man, there's just so many Knicks point guards you just go to, and you're just like, shake
Sergio
your head.
Rodriguez? Sergio Rodriguez?
That was when, was that the Shved years? Like when was Sergio?
Sergio was before that was like when we had that bullshit team before 2010 free agency, where it was just like,
it was just
like the team to like, all right, guys, just fucking get us there, right? Like,
gotcha, none
of you are going to be on this team, but just get us there. We'll pay you.
Where is Sergio now?
He's back in Europe now.
Is he?
Yeah.
Is he with Mirotić?
I hope so. I hope they're together.
Sergio is low key good in that 2K when he's on the Sixers. Was it 2K18, 2K17?
Oh yeah, was he good?
Yeah, he was that was like the last time I played 2K. I just remember Sergio Rodriguez. I would always pick him up as the backup point guard, and he would always like drain every single three, and he made like the best passes.
Yeah, I mean 2K really went downhill once they hired fucking James to work on it. So.
Oh, I agree. The stories have been awful. Like,
dude, he was the one who gave the idea to turn it into a gambling simulator, that bastard. He was like, hey, how can we take more of these poor, addicted souls' money? Let's put an actual slot machine in the game. We'll really fuck with them this time.
It definitely sounds like the corporate shill that James Marcida is.
James is like really just truly an evil mercenary disguised as a writer.
Yeah, and look, like if Perry, just to get back, but like if Perry didn't, if he was like hell-bent on getting Frank, like the way I think of it is that it's Perry, Mills, and Fizdale, and I truly think like they're working together to a certain extent. So I think if Fizdale was like, look, I don't really care for this guy, just get rid of him. And we know that, I think it's safe to assume that, I'm not saying Perry hates him, but I think it's safe to assume that Perry's not like, you know, a huge fan of his necessarily. And I think it's pretty obvious Mills is like in his corner. So I just think like if Fiz was kind of against Frank, he would have been traded one way or the other by now. And
yeah, they would have gotten a second round pick by now. If they really wanted to get rid of Frank, right, he would have been traded by now.
Right. So I'm more of the opinion that like maybe Fizdale's not his biggest fan, but I think Fiz also is like, look, I think this guy can actually play. So like, why don't we keep him and see if I can use my magical development skills to turn him into a dog.
Yeah, it's got to be a dog. I think they got to take him into the transmutation chamber, turn him into a true dog.
No, I think they just make him room with Morris.
That would probably
work pretty well.
that would definitely work. I mean, like, you have to stand up against Morris.
They should just have him watch like Full Metal. They should just reenact Full Metal Jacket, like, the training scene with Frank.
Oh man, have
Morris be like, what's his name? What's the drill sergeant's name? I forget, but he's like in all those shows or whatever too.
Yeah, that was it. R.H. Hermy or whatever his name is.
Yeah.
Poor guy. We're butchering his name. Rest in peace to the drill sergeant who's dead, who's rolling in his grave right now because he can't remember his name. Didn't the Morris twins go to like a boys and girls center to like beat up their stepfather?
Yeah, they did some crazy. I mean, they're fucking.
God, I wish we had both of them in New York. Can you imagine all the stories we would hear if they were both in New York together?
I actually think that it's good that they're separated. And yeah, look, Marcus Morris has already got the whole Knicks fan base behind him already. So.
Oh yeah, he can't do anything wrong right now. After hit Justin Anderson in the head with the basketball, like he's gonna have his jersey in the rafters.
Yeah, I saw a lot of like that's Bush League tweets, and I was just like, look, man, I don't know, maybe this game isn't for you.
I think we just need to draw the appropriate line between like it was sort of Bush League, but it was also badass. And we should appreciate it. We should appreciate him having the stones to, like, bop a dude in the head with a basketball and do some, like, street ball shit like that.
Morris, he did this type of shit when he was on the Celtics last year, and all we heard about was, like, how he's so tough and, like, it just adds so much to the culture.
Identity.
Motherfucker puts on a fucking Knicks jersey, and now all
it's
we have
Bush League, yeah,
Bush
I know.
League, and he's a thug, and I'm like, oh my god.
I mean, Enes Kanter went from a complete defensive nothing, you know, stat grabbing player to all of a sudden like the missing piece to the Boston Celtics summer.
Well, to be fair on that, more Knicks fans were saying about Enes Kanter. Like, the media still.
That's true, actually. People outside in New York were taking a side and being like, I can't believe they're not playing a guy that averages 17 and 10. It's like,
that's what it was. And then, don't worry, the Celtics fans, I think a few of them right now,
they're already
on Twitter.
They already know.
They already know. They're just like, oh boy, this isn't gonna work. And we're like,
maybe we
obviously
should have listened to all these Knicks fans last year.
I guess this would probably be a good segue for you, Drew, because one of the NBA media members who was really big on the Knicks are doing Enes Kanter dirty train was our boy, true enemy of the show, Howard the Beck.
Oh God, Howard Beck today with his tweet, which was very disingenuous. And yeah, this is a good segue point to our discussion on everything related to China and the NBA. And I don't even know where to start with my rant because I'm just so frustrated and disappointed with everyone in the way that it's being covered, the way the league has reacted, just everything about it. And it's just, you have Howard Beck saying that the people who are disappointed and angry and bashing Steve Kerr for pulling a no comment when he is one of the most outspoken coaches or just any, you know, members of the NBA on any sort of social issue, and he pulls a no comment on what's going on in Hong Kong and what they're doing in China, and he's like, well, if you're bashing him, you know, you just don't agree with anything that he says, you know, with his social commentary, and that's just not true. Like, people who are disappointed and upset with Steve Kerr do agree with what he says, because he largely says a lot of things that are socially conscious and fair, and what a lot of people agree with. I agree with pretty much everything Steve Kerr has argued and fought for, you know, in the press. And he's going to go out here and pull a no comment on Hong Kong? Like, that's just ridiculous to me. And then have Howard Beck be like, yeah, everyone who disagrees with him is fucking Clay Thomas Nazis. And it's like, no, that's not the case. Of course Clay Thomas and all his fucking Trump supporters are going to bash Kerr in the league for not standing up to China. I'm like, that's because they're opportunistic and they're disingenuous, disgusting people. So obviously they're going to do that. But so many people who are upset with the league and with the way the media has covered this stuff for certain, you know, individuals, it's so disappointing overall, and we are allowed to criticize and be disappointed in everyone. Like, that is a fair criticism. If you're going to be the league that cares about social issues and being woke, and you're going to decide to not support the, you know, the citizens of Hong Kong, you know, fighting for their freedom right now because some totalitarian bullshit government is going back on their word, like, an agreement that was legally binding, like, get the fuck out of here. Like, I don't want to hear that. Like, I don't want to hear that, like, you're not well-versed in it. Like, just Google it. It's not that hard.
How fucking well-versed? Like, first of all, you're not asking me to get a fucking PhD in, like, you know, Chinese, like, geopolitical affairs, right? No one's asking you to do that. It doesn't take too long to put, like, some basic shit together and be like, yeah, okay, I think it seems like the Hong Kong protesters have a point, and I support them for that. And, like, that doesn't even mean that you think that, like, that's not even that strong of a statement, right? Like, I get your frustration. I'm as equally frustrated with, like, Kerr, and I didn't listen to any of the interviews with Popovich, so I can't speak to what he
said. Yeah, neither did I, but I don't think if he actually said something, we would all know.
Right, it wouldn't even. So, like, maybe he didn't say anything. Like I said, I didn't hear what he said, so I'm not going to even mention it. But I did hear Kerr's, and that was disappointing. I saw fucking James Harden apologize to the government of China. Like, why are you apologizing?
Why are you apologizing? Like, why are you apologizing to them? Like, don't apologize to China.
Yeah, and, like, before we get into the owners that have kind of voiced the two owners that have made their feelings known publicly, I just think the league's response has been so poor, and, like, they botched their initial response by, like, kind of trying to wishy-washy it and just kind of, like, kind of support it, but not really, and, you know, China's great. It's like, you kind of just have to take a stance, and it doesn't even need to be that aggressive, but, like, you're getting bullied right now by the Chinese government because you're a slave to their dollars. You're a slave to their market. And will you take a financial hit if China bans the NBA? Absolutely. Absolutely you will. It's a fucking huge market. More people watched the NBA Finals in China last summer than even live in the United States of America. Okay? Like, it's a huge market. I understand that. But, like, you kind of just have to have... At some point, like, it can't... I just want to believe that it can't always just be about money. You know, like, I really want to believe that. Clearly, I'm wrong, and it always is about money. But I would love to just... I would love for it to not always be about money. You know? And to go back to your point about the league, like, look, you don't get to kind of get this prestige of, like, you know, like, in TV there's, like, prestige networks, prestige shows, right? Shows
yeah,
that aren't...
Yeah, like The Wire.
Yeah, yeah, like, they're prestige. They're not there to make you money. They're more about, like, you know, you get the awards and the critical acclaim. And it's like, I think to an extent, the NBA has tried to position itself, at least in the American sports landscape, as kind of like a prestige league with its woke takes and like supporting the players, being vocal about Trump and moving the All-Star game from Charlotte and all these things. And like, I think once you start doing stuff like that, you are taking a stance as a league, whether directly or tacitly. And at that point, you don't get to have it both ways. Like,
no, not at all.
You can't be like, well, now we don't, you know, oh, well, now, like, this is affecting money, and, like, we need to understand the situation and all that. Like, I mean, okay, but, like, do you really think every NBA player understood the situation of what was going on in, like, fucking Charlotte when they moved the All-Star game? I highly, highly doubt it. I highly, highly doubt it. Do I think every fucking player that, like, tweets fuck Trump has a clear understanding of, like, the ramifications of his policies and what they do and don't do? No, absolutely not. They don't. Like, we need to stop pretending that these guys have the full understanding of these situations just because they more directly impact us, okay? Like, that's just bullshit. And I'm sorry, but, like, I don't buy that excuse, and I think it's weak. And I actually would just rather them say, like, look, I would rather Kerr get up there and just be like, look, I've been instructed to not talk about any issue related to China at this point.
That's a better answer, because it comes off as him being like, look, I really want to say stuff, but, like, I'm going to get in trouble. And it's just like, you know what? More people would be understanding to the idea of just like, you know what? We're putting him in a bad situation. The league is doing this to him, and he can't really say what he wants to say. Like, that's the impression that would come off, that was his response. But he decided to go, no comment, I'm not familiar with it. And it's like, that's really disingenuous to me and really disappointing, because I highly doubt Steve Kerr knows all, like, the nuances that goes on with, like, police brutality, you know, transgender bathroom situations in Charlotte. Like,
see, I agree with pretty much everything you guys said except for the Steve Kerr stuff, because Steve Kerr, to me, the way that he talks to media and stuff and the way that he talks about issues, I think that he legitimately does like to be completely well-learned on any given issue before he makes any sort of comment about it. I know you guys follow Brian O'Ringer, who occasionally is kind of a hothead and a weirdo. But,
friend of the show, Scout with Brian.
Scout with Brian, yeah. It makes great scouting videos. It's just a little unhinged sometimes. But he posted a thing, you know, sort of in defense of Steve Kerr. Basically, like, he was like, I emailed Steve Kerr one time about comments that he made about, like, the Israel-Palestine situation at, like, 1 a.m. the night after, or, like, the night of, like, a Western Conference Finals game or something, and he literally emailed me that night to, like, give me his thoughts on it, and he was very well-spoken on it, very well-learned, had good, you know, like, knew exactly what he was talking about. I do think in the case of Steve Kerr, he legitimately doesn't want to speak up on this unless he actually knows it well, because he's a guy that, you know, with American politics, you know, he's well-spoken about Trump issues and stuff like that, just like Popovich is.
I mean, his dad got murdered in, like, Beirut.
Right. That's true. Right. I forgot about that. Yeah. So, I mean, so he's very well learned about
that.
That's fair. But, like, so... Oh,
yeah. That's good. That's fair. I mean, I just...
So, I just think, yeah, I do legitimately think that he wants to be well learned about something before he comments on it. He's, like, the one guy I'll give a pass on this. The NBA has been atrocious with handling the whole situation.
Okay, go. You finish up, because I have a counter for you for that.
I was just going to say, they've just been, the NBA itself has just been getting pushed around this whole time. I mean, there's literally, like, and the Rockets, even more so, are the worst ones, because the Rockets.
Oh, we're going to talk about the Rockets.
Oh, we're going to talk about the Rockets.
go ahead. You can talk about it, though.
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, they literally have, like, their own PR people telling Russell Westbrook and James Harden their two biggest figureheads to not say anything. And they got asked, like, a pretty tame question, man. It wasn't like, what are your thoughts about Hong Kong? It was literally just like, because of the events of this week, do you feel stranger about commenting on social issues now? And their PR person, like, yelled in from the side, like, don't answer that. It's like, are you serious? Like, that's, like, a very basic-ass question. Like, that's, like, just, like, a yes or no, man. Like, and it'd probably be like, yeah, I don't know how comfortable I'm going to be talking about stuff now, because we're kind of, like, you know, being strong-armed to not talk about things now. But I don't know. It's just annoying, the whole situation. The Rockets, like I said, the Rockets are terrible. The NBA is bad. Steve Kerr, I'm willing to give a pass to, even though I wish he would have at least said something to the effect of, like, I support Daryl Morey, and, like, I understand that this is a bad situation for the people of Hong Kong. I just don't know enough to really fully comment on it yet. But,
well, my only counter to the whole, like, you know, Scouts with Brian thing about, you know, Israel and Palestine, I think of all the geopolitical issues of the 21st, 20th, 19th, 18th, 17th, 16th, 15th, 14th, you know, continued century, I think the conflict between Israel and Palestine is probably the most complex. Definitely, let's say it's a Mount Rushmore, you know, complicated, you know, geopolitical conflict that's going on. Hong Kong is rather straightforward, right? Like, anyone who just kind of just reads up on it, it's rather straightforward of what's happening. So the idea that he needs to be, like, the idea of, like, if he's so well-versed and nuanced with Israel and Palestine, I think he's fully capable of being well-versed and understanding that the Chinese government is overreaching and being authoritarian and imperialistic when it comes to Hong Kong. I think that's fair to say with Kerr. Like, I'm fine if you want to give him a pass, but his defense can't be, I am nuanced with probably the most complicated, you know, political conflict of our time. Like, that can't be your defense for this one. So, yeah. Like, I'm sorry. Like, that can't be the case. No,
yeah.
Not going to respond?
I mean, I hear where you're coming from. I mean, I don't know. I just, like I said, I just think that I just understand, I guess, where, like, Kerr is coming from in this regard. But I can understand, like, being pissed that he wasn't at least a little bit vocal as one of, like, the leading political voices in the NBA. You know what I mean?
Like, just like, yeah, just like you can be a little better with it. But we need to bash the Rockets before we bash our last thing. The Rockets are fucking disgraceful. Let's be honest. They're absolutely disgraceful about how they've handled everything. You have the, like you mentioned, the PR person's like hushing a legitimate question from CNN. It's not even asking about Hong Kong. It's like, hey, you guys can't speak about this. How is this affecting you? They're like, shut the fuck up. And it's like, are you kidding me? Then you have their players defending the government, and you have the owner caving in as well. Like, it's absolutely disgraceful what we just witnessed with everything with the Rockets, and they're not standing with their GM, like, their employee. Like, are you kidding me? Like, that's just insane to me.
I think everything about it is crazy. So, like, even from Morey on down, because Morey tweets this thing, right? And it's, like, a very tame fucking thing, but then he deletes it as soon as there's, you know, this pushback. And it's like, so you don't even believe. And then he issues this entire edict where he's, like, apologizing for it, right? So like, I understand it, but I'm also like, wow, dude, that's so weak. That's really, really weak. And I don't know. I just, it's just very crazy to me. Then, I mean, Fertitta handled it so poorly, just immediately coming out and, like, basically undermining what you know, what Morey tweeted. And then he was, like, liking comments on Instagram about firing Morey. Do you see this? He was, liking comments about this. What the fuck are you doing, man? That's just – I mean, as it is, I despise that organization. So, like, just their entire handling of this is so, so poor. And I don't know, man. I just – it's very hard for me to – I mean, Harden, which we talked about, which is, like, that was insane for him to just apologizing. Like, have some decent – like, just have a little bit of – have a little shred of self-respect for yourself, buddy.
Yeah, defend the guy who says you're better than Michael Jordan. Like, come on now. Like, seriously.
Yeah. I mean, the thing with Morey seemed pretty obvious to me. It was basically just he tweeted it because, honestly, this is my real honest opinion. I think unfortunately for Daryl Morey, he's kind of become this martyr for this cause almost that I really doubt that he's, like, super, super passionate about. I think he
There's
probably
no
tweeted
way
that.
He is.
I think he probably just tweeted that because it was, like, the trendy hashtag to tweet out and, like, the trendy thing to, like, support, you know? And then realized.
I've just seen something on Twitter and been like, oh, yeah. Like, this is,
oh, yeah, I agree with this. Yeah, this seems like an atrocity. Okay, I'll tweet this out, too. And then immediately started getting bombarded probably with emails from Rockets ownership being like, you motherfucker, like, you're ruining our business opportunities. Like, the Chinese government emailed us 5 seconds after that went out. Please delete it. Like, you know, it's because the Chinese government is insane. But, yeah, I just I think that ultimately he just did something that he, you know, probably saw for a minute, thought, like, oh, this is something I can get behind, and then, like, tweeted it, and now it's, like, borderline ruining his whole career. So I kind of, as much as I don't like Daryl Morey, I feel for him a little bit in that regard. But, yeah, the Rockets, I mean, it was like I was just saying a minute ago, the Rockets have been the worst out of anybody in this whole situation because they're the ones that they have a huge Chinese fan base, and now China's literally pulling their merch and everything else, like, I mean,
they banned it, right?
They banned it already. Yeah, they're the ones that literally wear the Chinese jerseys. Like, no other team in the league really does that. They wear, like, Chinese jerseys every single year with, like, you know, Rockets and Chinese written on them because that's, like, such a huge part of their team identity at this point.
So just to be clear, but this is what Morey tweeted out, okay? He just tweeted out, fight for freedom, stand with Hong Kong. That's it. That's the tweet, right? And then Fertitta, like, I don't know, as soon as he sees this clearly, puts out a tweet. Listen, @DarylMorey does not speak for the Houston Rockets. Our presence in Tokyo is all about the promotion of the NBA internationally, and we are not a political organization. Which is, like, fucking total bullshit, because this guy goes on CNBC and, like, praises Donald Trump. He's, like, bitched about how hard it is to pay, like, workers, medical care and shit. It's like, dude, you are such a clown show right now. Go away. Just shut up. You leveraged out your own fucking wealth to buy an NBA team, and you can't afford it, so you've been cutting fucking costs ever since you took over. Like, I'm so sick of this guy. He looks like a fucking degenerate alcoholic to begin with. He's a piece of shit, obviously. Like, he's never going to listen to this pod, so I really don't give a shit what I say about him.
You think the Chinese government's going to listen to this pod?
Fuck the Chinese government. He's...
Can you imagine China sends SB Nation an email? Like, please cease and desist with this podcast.
I can't... I mean, I just can't imagine being that rich and being that much of a pussy. You don't even have... Okay, I understand getting him to delete the tweet, right? I do understand that, just from a business perspective. But, like, I feel like he really just threw him under the bus with that.
He did. Just threw him under the bus.
Yeah, and that's – I don't like that. Like, I think you could even come out with a statement and just put out something better than this, right? Just, you don't need to, like – I don't know. Off the top of my head, I can't think. Like, you pay probably millions of dollars for PR people, okay? Have them figure out what to tweet. What to say, and let them handle it, right? You don't need to be on your own personal account handling business at 11:54 p.m., okay? And that's on a Friday night? Yeah, Friday night. So you know his ass been drinking. Like, there's no way he needs to be doing that.
Oh, man. Alex, do you have anything to add before I rip who I think actually may be even worse than the Rockets?
Is it Josiah?
It's Josiah. I mean,
yeah. Go for it, baby. Go in. Guy. I'm ready to move on to this one.
I mean, this fucking guy. He has the goddamn nerve to go on Facebook and try to belittle people and be like, you don't understand Chinese history and the complications of it.
Can I read some of his greatest hits here?
Oh, please. Please read it.
Okay. Supporting a separatist movement in a Chinese territory is one of those third rail issues, not only for the Chinese government, but also for citizens of China. The one thing that is terribly misunderstood and often ignored by the Western press and those critical of China is that 1.4 billion Chinese citizens stand united when it comes to the territorial integrity of China and the country's sovereignty over her homeland. This issue is non-negotiable. Go at it.
This frustrates me so much. First of all, Hong Kong is a part of China. Like, this fucking guy doesn't even understand that Hong Kong is a part of China. They're Chinese. It's not an independent country. It's not a sovereign city. It's not Singapore. It's nothing like that. It just has its own legislative council that deals with its own, you know, entity. That's it. It's just, you know.
And
like,
that was agreed upon.
Yes, that was agreed upon. That's the thing that's so goddamn frustrating, that people are like, you don't understand what's going on. The Chinese are like, no, we're just not agreeing to this anymore. Like, they're just going to actually, you know, get, like, we're just taking you, Hong Kong. And Hong Kong's like, no, we agreed to this. This is why we have the separate governments. Like, you agreed to this. And China's like, no, we're not doing this anymore. And they're beating the shit out of the people of Hong Kong because of it. Like, Josiah is speaking fucking Chinese communist propaganda, and he's an owner of an American sports franchise. And no one is criticizing Josiah at all. It's just us right now on a podcast that only, like, 700 people listen to. Like, this is fucking
7,000 people.
700,000
people listen to
this. 700,000 people, and none of them are going to be in China after this episode. Like, where is the outrage from legacy media people? Like, I swear to God, if James Dolan said this, we wouldn't hear the end of it for the entire season. They would always be like, hey, you know that James Dolan guy? He sided with the fucking communists. That's all we would hear about from every single person. But just because the Nets owner did it, and he supposedly, you know, because he's not even from China. He's from Taiwan. He grew up in Taiwan. Do people not know what Taiwan actually is? Like, holy shit, let's read a fucking history book. Yeah, do you know what is a country, like, how it became a country? It was from the fucking revolution. Like, do you guys not, I swear to God, fucking, Josiah can go fucking, you know, kick rocks.
I know where you were going to go with that one. But,
yeah, I don't know if I could possibly even add anything. See, I'm going to pull the Steve Kerr card here. I'm going to say, I don't know nearly enough about this shit to go in as hard as Drew just went in. So I'm gonna let that one stand. I couldn't possibly add anything that would make that better.
Yeah. So the only thing I will add to is actually just to build upon that is he's of Chinese, like Chinese ancestry, Chinese descent. He's of Chinese descent. But yes, he was born in Taiwan, grew up in Taiwan, then he moved to this country called America, went to high school here, went to undergraduate school here. I think he went to, I want to say Yale or Princeton maybe, I forget what, some fucking Ivy League school, okay? He went to undergraduate there, and I'm pretty sure Princeton, and law school there. So, and then he's been working in America. Like, he worked in America, that was his first job, probably working at some douchebag Wall Street firm or something. Now he's involved with Alibaba, who is like massive. Yeah, it's basically Chinese Amazon, way bigger than Amazon.
Oh, way significantly
bigger than Amazon. So imagine that. And like, you know, that's what he's doing. I don't even know what else to say other than that. And it's bizarre to me. I tweeted about this week. It's pretty simple. Like, if James Dolan, James Dolan catches shit for, like, he gets, like, labeled as some fucking threat to democracy because he's not inviting, you know, the New York Daily News.
Yeah, to phone conversations. Oh, yeah, God forbid fucking Stephen Bondi doesn't hear a fucking, you know, what's it called, investor call. It's like, fucking spare me.
Yeah, it's like introductory press conferences and investor calls. Joe Tsai is out here, like, propagating, you know, he's just spouting off communist propaganda, like, he's basically, he is actually arguing against freedom of expression.
Yes.
Like, he's saying that an American citizen should not be allowed to talk about Chinese issues. Yeah, to talk about Chinese issues in America. It's amazing to me how, like, look, if you want to talk about fake woke, you want to know who is more fake woke than the NBA? All of the fucking people that constitute NBA Twitter. All the check marks, all you motherfucking check marks. Not all of you, but most of you. All of them love to get on their social and political high horse, and all the time, 24/7, 365, I see all these fucking political conversations. I try my best not to get involved because that's not really my area of expertise, and it's just not something I really want to get involved with on Twitter, which I think is like generally the worst medium in the entire world to discuss any issue with nuance. It's hard enough discussing the Porzingis trade on Twitter. Forget, you know, any serious issue. So, like, I try to avoid that, but I feel like so many people in NBA media, like, I mean, look, we can be honest, like, Howard Beck is always talking about social media, or not, like, I don't want to say SJW stuff, but, like, yeah, SJW stuff.
We always talk about, you know, we talk about, like, freedom of the press, freedom of expression, the idea that, like, freedom is important, the idea of you be able to, like, express yourself, and the idea that people are allowed to comment on these things, and the idea, you know, police brutality and, you know, domestic abuse and all these sort of things. Like, he's very, like, him and so many other people are on the forefront of these sort of issues. And then you have something that's rather straightforward in Hong Kong, and you're going to pull the card of, like, oh, this is a lot more nuanced, and you're not going to rip an owner who is just so blatantly in, like, the thing for, like, China. It's, like, it's not only just, like, the Hong Kong thing. They're harvesting organs from ethnic Muslims in the western part of China right now. Like, they're ethnically cleansing their population. They've not only done this,
and they have these,
done,
like,
this before, too, under Mao. It's, like, they're supporting. Like, how are you not? It's unbelievably frustrating.
I think they have them in what they're calling, like, re-education camps or something like that.
Yes, which is basically concentration camps.
Yeah, well, it's, like, basically, like, it's, like, basically renounce your religion or go to this camp and die.
Insane.
Yeah. So, and, like, look, one thing I will say, I shit on the Knicks beat all the time, but I will say one thing I appreciate about the Knicks beat is that these guys don't really tweet out. They don't get into that too much, you know? I haven't noticed too many, like, you know, I think we all follow the Knicks beat guys. I don't need to name who they are, but, like, I don't really notice any of them going deep down political rabbit holes ever, you know? So, like, when they don't tweet about this, I don't actually have too big of a problem with that. My problem is more that, like, I think this is a issue worth exploring and asking questions about and talking to, right? So, like, look, maybe they didn't want – maybe a lot of NBA coaches and players and whoever, personnel, maybe they don't want to talk about it while there's still teams there, you know, because you just don't know – you don't want it to escalate it anymore.
I mean,
and maybe,
that's fair.
Yeah, and maybe, look, once they leave, maybe we'll get a bunch of super honest opinions and feelings and whatever. I'm not particularly bullish on that, but – let's just say that's a possibility. You know, all I'm saying is, like, once these guys leave China, all these NBA teams, I would be very disappointed if at least the local New York beat, if not the national guys, I don't expect shit from the national guys because they only care about stupid storylines and dumb narratives at all times. But I would like to see if the local beat would, you know, kind of explore this because I think it is something worth exploring. Our good friend, Nets Daily, even on their Twitter account, actually tweeted out this week that they were like, yeah, we, like, don't be surprised if there's protests outside of Barclays all year long. And I do think that's a distinct possibility because obviously there's a significant Chinese and presumably Hong Kong population in New York City. And, you know, I'm sure that many of them will feel a certain type of way about what Joe Josai decided to kind of insert him, when he decided to insert himself into the conversation.
I mean, I think you're overlooking the fact that Brooklyn is the cool borough.
Oh, you're right.
According to Kevin Durant. So what's going to happen is Josai is just going to go outside, you know, in his, like, nice aviator sunglasses and just do, like, you know, little, like, finger guns at people. And it's just going to, you know, totally, like, negate the fact that he's a terrible person because he's so cool. Right?
Well, the one thing I will say I'm disappointed in is the fact that, like, Josai said this on Monday, and then Kevin Durant goes on his whole thing for Hot 97 on Tuesday, and everyone just kept talking about the Kevin Durant thing, and that's just so frustrating.
I mean, it almost makes you wonder if they were playing it that way.
I'm not even joking. I think that's 100% what happened. Because I don't, usually when these guys are going on, like, if you're going on, like, Hot 97 or something, right? You would at least hear about it. I'm not saying it'd be huge news, but like you would hear about it like a day before or something like that, right? Like, oh yeah, Kevin Durant's going to be on with us tomorrow. I can't say I was listening to Hot 97 all day Monday. They did do that, but it's kind of interesting. He just went on their show and then like, and I, look, I, fair enough. He got asked a question. You know, he didn't.
Yeah, he answered it. Like, yeah, he didn't bring it up.
But at the same time, like, you don't need to answer that question. If they're asking you, like, first, you're fucking Kevin Durant, okay? So, you're not on the Knicks. You've never been on the Knicks, even though there are thousands of Photoshopped images of you on the Knicks. You've never been on the Knicks. You're probably never going to be on the Knicks. Why the fuck are you talking about the Knicks? Why are you giving your opinion on the Knicks? I don't want to hear your opinion on the Knicks.
Yeah, who cares?
I don't give a shit. If Julius Randle was asked about it, they asked RJ Barrett and Kevin Knox at like multiple events before the season about the Nets. And what was their answer? We don't care about the Nets. We're not worried about the Nets. We're worried about ourselves. If they can give that mature verse, he wanted to answer that question. That's what I'm saying. Like, he wanted to answer that question. He wanted to say something about the Knicks. And he said whatever he said. And like, sure, he didn't bring it up himself, but he didn't duck it. And one thing we know about Kevin Durant is he's not afraid to just give an answer that has nothing to do with the question you asked, or just insult you for even asking the question, you know. So I don't really give a shit what the reason is for him to, like, he shouldn't talk about the Knicks, okay? Like, he shouldn't talk about any team that's not the Nets, as far as I'm concerned. I thought it was shitty that he threw the Warriors and Steph and all those guys kind of under the bus in that Wall Street Journal interview. I thought it was shitty that in the same interview he was, like, taking a dump on OKC for no apparent reason. I don't think you need to do that. I don't think you should be doing that. It's not your place anymore. You don't play for these teams. Like, you're not an employee. They don't fucking pay your pay. Like, they don't pay you money. You don't have to talk about them. You don't get to talk about them. Shut the fuck up.
Kevin Durant, if I may, is, like, the physical embodiment of, you know, that the one, you know, there's, like, all the memes of, like, the crudely drawn dude, like, the black and white thing where it's, you know, the guy with all different expressions or whatever. Yeah. He is, like, the physical embodiment of the one with, like, the crude smiley mask in front of the face, like, frantically crying behind it. Like, that's absolutely Kevin Durant all the time. Like, he's just like, I don't care, man, but let me tell you why the Knicks suck. Like,
yeah.
He wants to act like he's Mr. Indifferent, but he's like, really, yeah. He cares very much about everything.
Right. And then the second thing is, like, if I want to find out what is cool, I am not finding out from the dude who didn't want to be called the Slim Reaper and wanted to be called the Servant, okay?
Yeah, exactly.
That's the second point. The third point is, like, my question is, if that's the answer he gives, right? Oh, well, you know, the Knicks aren't cool, and, you know, they're, like, you know, young guys now, they think that the Warriors are cool, and maybe the Lakers even, and the Nets, like, sure, I don't even want to get into how ridiculous putting the Nets with those two teams is, but I digress. Like, if that's the question, like, wouldn't the natural follow-up then be, why are you making life-altering decisions based on what the fuck is cool?
It's true. Like, I mean, I don't expect Hot 97 to do it, but yeah, you're right. That's the follow-up question. Like, why, yeah, what?
No, Hot 97 doesn't need to do it. I'm saying, like, look, not I don't want to call anybody out, but I'm going to say it. Like, Vorkunov had that article today about why Kevin Durant's, like, you know...
Why him saying cool matters, which is...
Yeah, why it matters. And I don't have The Athletic anymore. Shout out to you, Frank Isola, for sending me money. I don't know what the body of that was. But to me, if it didn't fundamentally ask or bother to delve into that question specifically, like, why are you making life-altering choices based on what's cool, then I just don't really get it, because that's my natural thought. Like, the next thought is like, okay, well, why are you making, like, you know, basically at what, like, at the second biggest decision of his career, if not the first, right? It's the site, mm-hmm. like, in his basketball career anyway, it's a massive decision he made in his career based on it being cool. And, like, you're not just talking about, like, these guys, like, Kevin Durant left the Golden State Warriors, okay? Kyrie Irving left, like, we shit on the Celtics, but, like, the Celtics objectively... pretty good situation, pretty decently run team for a long time, okay? We don't need to, like, I think we all think that Ainge is a bit overrated, but I don't think anybody would say he's a bad, he clearly runs a good organization, okay? Like, they left these teams to go play for the Nets because the Nets are cool? Like, I would ask that, I would want to find out more about that. What does that mean? Why are you making choices based on that? And... you know, just for the record, the Nets have a worse record in this decade than the Knicks. I just want to throw that out there. I think they're 19 games worse, 19 wins worse than the Knicks in this decade. So please miss me. No team has ever fucking milked an 8 or whatever, 6 seed, 7 seed, whatever the hell they got. No one has ever milked a 42-40 season more than the Nets had milked that season. So, like, you know, the whole thing made no sense to me.
The only reason they've been able to milk that much is because of what a horrific garbage fire they were before that. Like, it was just such a stark turnaround from the fact that, like, they went from, you know, lottery team without any draft picks to, to a 42-40 team that actually made the playoffs. Plus, they were everybody's darling anyway. Like, the second that they... hired. The second that they offered Alan Crabb a huge contract, got saved on it, and then gave up assets to bring him back, they were the Colton boys. You know, that's the smartest move I've ever seen in my whole life any NBA general manager makes. So, of course, that was, you know, the straw that broke the camel's back and turned, you know, the Nets into the ultimate darling that they are. I really think, honestly, though, I mean, this is probably, you know, we're kind of Knicks homery, whatever, fuck it. But, like, you know, to a degree. Like, I really think that a large part of why the Nets were so, like, blown up is because they play in the same city as the Knicks, and it gives you more opportunity to shit on the Knicks. I think that's a really large part of why they started turning into this, like, darling that they were.
Well,
because plenty of other teams have been operating kind of the way that they did, you know, maybe not with quite as good of results, but, like, you know, trying to stockpile assets and shit and, like... you know,
I think the Nets are darlings because they live in Brooklyn. Most of the NBA Twitter and writers live in Brooklyn. They just give access to people
in
the media. I think that's really all that it comes down to. Like, the Knicks don't give access to anyone. We saw that. We know that. We all find it ridiculous that they're not more open with their media policy and stuff, but the Knicks are whatever they are with their, you know, who they want in and whatnot. The Nets, they don't care. They bring everyone in, and from everyone from, like, you know, from Zach Lowe to – I don't even know who else. Like, you know, all the people, like, they live in Brooklyn, they live in Queens, they get to the Barclays Center, they talk about how great everything is, and they get free press, free good press, because they pretty much have, like, the entire basketball writing community that lives in New York. They live there, and they have access to the facilities. Like, that's really what it comes down to.
Do you think the writers go up to the big, rusty, gross-looking, metal... beams or whatever, and scratch off a little bit of rust, put it in, like, a vial to put in their time capsule at home, like, to remember the day they got to cover the game? I probably would.
The thing is, like, count how many times they talk about the Nets without a comparison to the Knicks in any way. It just never happens.
It never happens.
And it's like, I don't know, it's just so weird. Like, I don't know. Maybe it happens with the Clippers, too. I feel like it doesn't happen that way over there. And maybe that's because the Clippers are they're more relevant than the Nets. I don't know. I have no idea. I don't really – look, all I'm saying is the Nets signed Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, and I feel like all I've heard about the summer is the Knicks, which is fucking bananas.
I'm with you on that. Like, it's true. That's all we heard about. It's between, like, those two teams. And, like, all the Knicks did was just, like, some solid moves. And, like, that's all we keep hearing about is, like, Knicks. And it's like, okay, so, like, you're making us have to talk about it. Like, I'd much rather talk about, like, Wayne Ellington, but
I'd rather just, like, it's fucking annoying that we have to sit here and, like, and I guess we don't have to, like, we're... Like,
yeah, we don't have to, but, like, this is what people are talking about. They kind of want to hear, you know, things on it. So, like,
we're not driving discourse, right? As much as, you know, our friend Zach DeLuccio wants to
fucking meatball over here thinking we're media personnel. This fucking guy. Like, we have sway in anything.
For what it's worth, I was Team Zach on that. We are media to a certain degree.
Yeah, you two are both fucking meatballs who like chicken breasts, like, not seasoned.
Swatch breasts. You guys are like the fucking alien.
I'm just saying, all right, if I may, you know, vocalize my take on this, it's to be considered media is different than being considered like a quote-unquote journalist. You know what I mean? Like, I think that you guys are conflating media with being a journalist, where a journalist is the one that goes and gets the live quotes, covers the games, all that stuff, you know, gets the access that you're looking for and delivers news. But, like, we are secondary news. You know what I mean? Like, we discuss the news. We're essentially like the commentators on TV, you know what I'm saying? Like, to a much lesser degree, you guys
are Nick's
like
first Steve- take.
Exactly. You guys are like Stephen A. Smith or Skip Bayless. I mean, really, how much news is Skip Bayless breaking? He hasn't broken a story in like 30 years.
How dare you slander Skip Bayless like that?
Did you see the that ESPN fucking thing they did this week with the Kellerman and Stephen A. Smith? It was the day after. I think it was like yesterday.
Was it the one where Stephen A. like freaked out and was like, "You producers are depressing me. Like, talk about the Knicks."
I actually didn't watch. That was actually the one thing I did not watch.
I haven't watched it. I just heard about it.
I hadn't watched it until, like, today. It was on, like, you know when you're just scrolling and a video starts playing, and I was like, fuck it, I guess I'll just watch it. So, I watched it, and I was just like, this is what happens when you can't talk about China, right? Like, when you can't talk about the most important fucking... the actual most important issue in basketball, at least, occurring right now, and you have to find shit to talk about, so you just shit on the Knicks. Like, call the KD said they. Why was that news? Like, why does it matter what KD? Why the fuck do I care what KD thinks is cool or not? I just can't get over that. Why does it matter? Why does it matter? And for the record, like, I loved how everybody that asked about the Knicks, like everyone, Fizdale, Morris, and Randall, all three of them were asked about it. I think maybe in Taj they asked about it. All of them were just like, yeah, I don't care, man.
His response was actually hilarious. He was basically just like, well, at least we're in the news every day.
But he's like, it's amazing that like everybody just keeps talking about us. I'm honored. That was actually really funny. And then I think Randall was just like, shit, I think it's pretty cool. And then Morris
said he feels really cool wearing his Knicks gear. And I was like, that's awesome. I tell you what, between him, RJ, especially, of the new editions, those guys know how to work a damn microphone. Like, they can be like in the WWE. Like,
So, one thing, actually, though, I will say this, and I hate giving the Nets credit, but one, it's not even really giving the Nets credit. It's actually much worse than that. I have to give Spencer Dinwiddie credit. but, like, one thing I will say is that, you know, Dinwiddie was like a cheerleader for the organization, right? Like, he's been out there for a couple years just like talking about how awesome the Nets are, the Nets are this, the Nets are that. Even Jared fucking...
bloated corpse on SVU, Jared Dudley.
Yeah, like you need to have that type, those type of characters and personalities to... Look, you're never going to shift the media perception until you win a championship like 16 times in a row or something. But I think like having those type of vocal personalities can transmit a different message to players around the NBA, which I think maybe is already slowly happening. But I do think that these guys will help it more than anybody else has. Morris too, obviously. So I think that's great. And like, I think you also are seeing perhaps in this, and maybe I'm reading a little bit too much into this, but I think you're seeing to an extent why Perry and Mills did want to add veterans to this team, because I think it would really suck if I was a young player and the highest profile players in the team really were like the young guys, and you had to sit there and answer these questions about, like, do you think playing for the Knicks is cool? Is it cool? Like, what do you think about KD saying the Knicks aren't cool? I think that would really suck for, like, first and second year players, or even third year players, have to answer that. And it's nice to have these vets that, like, can get asked that question. And because, first of all, the media wants to talk to them, right? So that, like, makes a big difference. So, like, they can kind of take that load off of the young guys. But I think that's, like, a really good thing, and it helps those younger players, because it's like they just need to focus on fucking basketball. Like, they don't need to worry. They're not going to have to deal with all the most ridiculous questions that get asked of them. And, like, you know, I mean, as soon as Porzingis got drafted, right, like, he was kind of the immediately cast as the face of the franchise, and, like, people wanted his takes on each and every fucking thing. Like, he got asked every day about, like, the whole Melo and Phil Jackson thing, right? I mean, it is. That whole scenario was so awkward and shittily handled. Whereas, like, I just like how they've built this roster, at least in terms of personality, and kind of, like, having guys that answer tougher questions protect. Like, there's protection for the young players. I guess that's what I'm getting at. And I wouldn't say that this was the first, like, this made it clear. And, like, maybe I'm reaching, but I did kind of notice that. The last couple of days, how, like, those guys were kind of taking the lead in answering these questions. I can't imagine being asked such a stupid question. But they were asked about it, and they answered it perfectly. All of them answered it perfectly.
Yeah, I would definitely be excited to have Julius Randle, Marcus Morris, and Taj Gibson as, like, my backup. You know, like, the people who got me have my back. That's a pretty strong foundation, because I'm not messing with any of those three guys at all.
Yeah, I mean, really, I don't think there's a single player that the Knicks brought in the offseason that I'd really want to mess with, you know? Like,
I'd mess with Alfred Payton. I'd fuck him up.
Yeah, you say that, but...
He's from New Orleans, man. Like, he'd fuck you up.
I'm going to say, like, I don't think RJ is much of a fighter. I do think Iggy would beat someone up, though.
Iggy would beat up everybody on the team, probably.
Isn't his dad, like, a boxer?
Like an MMA guy, yeah. Like, he's trained. He's trained with his dad, you know. Like,
yeah, Iggy would beat the shit out of some people.
Yeah, like, I'm actually convinced now that's got to be, like, 65% of the reason he was drafted. They're probably
Forcer.
Yeah, like, oh, you fight? All right. Yeah. Good. Yeah, we're going to trade up and get
go out there and be the goon squad, please.
No, but it is good, though. Like, I know that culture is so over. I mean, it's weird. Like, it's overblown.
But it's not underrated.
Yeah. That's a good way of putting it. Like, the Knicks, I don't think they had a bad culture last year, really. But, like, there wasn't any leader. Like, Tim was the leader, I guess, but it's like, that guy's not really a leader. I appreciate his efforts to try and be a leader, but it's just not kind of like... He doesn't have that charisma or that clout to be in that role. And I don't know. I just, like, I think the guy...
Can you tell me that you didn't think penis cancer was a leader?
Not on the court. Not when it comes to basketball, that's for sure.
I don't know. I thought he led pretty well. He's pretty demonstrative. I mean, he taught everybody how to pout on the bench when they're not playing enough.
If Mario Hezonja has to tell you to stop being a fucking pouty asshole... That's a problem. That is a problem.
And his cancer did a great job of teaching how to egg on the crowd to get themselves up last year. That was pretty good to, like, you know, demoralize his teammates and insist that he get put into the game. That was pretty good.
Yeah, that guy is such an embarrassing piece of trash.
Maybe, like, I almost would say that I would probably take Porzingis back on the team before I take Cantor back on the team.
No,
I know it's tough, right? It's a really tough decision.
It is tougher than a knife.
At least Porzingis is actually, like, useful on the court, though.
Right, like, that's the thing. Like, at least Porzingis is actually good at basketball.
Yeah, but he's not good at, like, life.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. They're
Cantor
kind of like
Cantor is pretty good at life, though.
Yeah, like Cantor's good at life.
Really good at life. I like Cantor off the court to a degree. Like, he's corny and stuff, but, like, you know, he's well-meaning most of the time off the court, but on the court,
no,
and
he's
like
a legitimately good guy. Like, he's legitimately.
But, like, on the court and basketball politics wise, he's the worst possible player in the history of forever.
Of professional sports.
Yeah,
professional sports. Yes, forget everybody else. Anybody else that's ever been an issue in sports, and his Cantor trumps them all.
This is a good way to probably to end the podcast. Alex, since you just decided to just hop on this call without us knowing or anything like that, what would you like to plug?
Well, to be fair, I did send you guys a message, but you guys are clearly, you know, in the throes of conversation.
Oh, my God, can you not ruin the joke? God damn it,
Alex. I did just hop on. It was fun. It was a good time. did you announce me ahead of time, like, that I was coming on? Or did I just show up?
I don't know. I don't even know if we're going to cut this now or not. But anyway, just plug what you got to plug.
I'm just freaking the fourth wall a little bit. Nobody's going to listen this far anyway. Come on, man. You know the numbers.
That's true. You're very right on that. All right.
Anyway, which means nobody's going to hear this, but I'll say it anyway. Follow me on Twitter, @TheAlexWolf. Follow Posting and Toasting on Twitter, @PTKnicksBlogs. Follow Locked On Knicks at Twitter, @LockedOnKnicks. And be sure to read Posting and Toasting, even though it's probably where you're listening to this podcast. And also make sure to listen to Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast. That is all.
Oh,
that's all I got.
And a shout out to Andrew Claudio, who has joined the PNT.
Yeah. Shout out to Claudio.
He's a member of his family, baby.
That's exciting. We got to get him on here so we can just, you know, host the podcast and take our jobs.
That'd be great.
That'd be great. Schwinn, what would you like to plug?
Bills have a bye week. That's good. Got that going for me, which is nice. 4-1. Doing a lot better than the Jets, who have how many wins right now?
They have one quarterback whose spleen is not going to explode this week, apparently.
Oh, so, exciting.
That's a plus. Yeah. It's a big plus.
So, yeah, I'm in a good – it's a sad day when the Bills are the team I have the most confidence in currently of all my favorite teams. Sad day.
That really is a sad day.
They're doing well, though, can I say? So, yeah, they got the bye, going to get healthy. Then we get to play the fucking Dolphins, who suck the week after that. Looks like a pretty knock on wood, playoffs should be in our future. So, yeah, that's it. Enjoy the Jets game this weekend, Alex. I know that you're looking forward to it.
I actually kind of am. Like,
well, Darnold's going to play, right? So.
Yeah, Darnold's going to play. I actually just got a brand new Bell jersey from DHgate. Someone turned me on to that on Twitter. They're like, yeah, the jerseys are like $18. Dude, I got it. It legitimately
actual
like,
jerseys?
Yeah, dude. It's like, I'll send you a link. There's a site called DHgate, which is like, I probably just supported China. I shouldn't even
plug
in this right now. But I'm pretty sure it's like Alibaba, kind of. Like, it's just like, they like steal the stuff from the factories and send them to you for mega cheap instead of marking them up 5,000%. So it was like $18 and it's like legitimately, it has like Nike logos on it and everything. And it's like actually the quality of the ones that you pay like $120 for. So pretty dope.
Well, that's a great promotion. We're not going to see any money from these guys, but at least I got some free pub. I'm going to plug a potential Mitchell Robinson article I'm going to be writing for Posting and Toasting. I've been working on that. That should be coming out. I don't know when, but hopefully sometime early next week. And I would like to plug also the 5 demands of the protesters of Hong Kong. They want full withdrawal of the extradition bill. They want a commission of inquiry into the police brutality that is happening. A retracted the classification of protesters as rioters, amnesty for arrested protesters, dual universal suffrage, meaning for both the legislative council and the chief executive. Not one less. And fuck China. Have a good night, guys.